This is the new era. This is the new band, and we're unbreakable.
We can rebuild him. We have the technology. We can make him better than he was. Better, stronger, faster. Actually, better, stronger,
faster. Is
that
a line from Starship Troopers or something?
No, it's actually the Million Dollar Man.
It's $6 Million Man. I know that, and
I don't even know what that is.
We Brits don't do excitement, so this is the best you're going to get.
Chris is bringing the noise today, apparently.
Speaking of vanilla...
It's just, I don't understand why.
I don't think anyone does. I don't think Travis Green understands.
Talking you through every goalie controversy, scoring slump, and draft lottery bust, this is the C4 Podcast on CanucksHockeyBlog.com and CKNW.com. Here they are, the best starting lineup to never wear a C, Chris, Anna, Matt, and Adam.
Welcome to another episode of the C4 Canucks Hockey Podcast. That is correct. It is episode 200. I was about to refer to this.
I was about to say it's not just any episode.
As Chris and Clay's Canucks commentary. Because I'm Chris at Lightforce, joined in a very secret location by the man himself, Clay Emo at Canuck Clay.
Hello, old friends and new friends. It is good to be back with the brothers. The band is reunited.
You know what? It's been such a long time since we introduced at Canuck Clay. I had to process in my brain, like, that is still his Twitter handle, right? Because it's been so long we've actually introed Clay as Canuck Clay.
Yeah, Chris, I know he's the only Caucasian guy on the planet who can pronounce my last name properly, so thank you.
You're very welcome. But see, I had years of experience. Like, I remember when we first started working together with CanucksHockeyBlog.com, I think I might have mispronounced your name once, and you corrected me. Very polite. Like, and then you used the Finding Nemo example, and I've seen
this. That's the go-to line. Yep.
Right? And ever since then, I've made an effort to ensure that I get it right. In fact, I think there's been times I've been talking to people, and they'll say your name wrong. I'm like, oh, actually, it's Emo.
As Richmond guys got to stick together.
You know.
This is bringing back so many memories. Like, I'm just like, this is like flashback Friday, like retro Thursday. I don't know what you know what I'm talking about.
We're like a fine wine.
This is bringing back a lot of great memories. So it is great to have all three of us in the same room once again.
Yeah, and that's Matt Lee, producer extraordinaire at @Matt_Lee_61.
I'm not even producing today.
No, in fact, for those of you who tune in on the reg, you know, we've been trying to do things to make sure that we can improve on the production value. And I thought
found our new studio. It's right here.
Episode 200. We got Clay coming back in. Let's show off all the toys. And so I've got my gear from my not to be mentioned other podcasts that you get pissed off about, man.
Yes.
So I brought
congratulations on that, all that success, though.
Yes. Thank you. Thank you.
I don't even know what you're talking about, and I'll say congratulations.
But I brought that gear in, and yeah, we're here. Clay, you know, as guest, also decided to host us for this episode because we ran into issues trying to book our normal space.
The inspiration. This is better, though.
Yeah, anytime you want to come to my workplace. Anytime.
Is that how we can get you back on this podcast? We just
whatever keeps Clay not at home longer is better for the family, too.
I think they'd agree with you. Whatever it takes. We'll figure that out later.
Yeah, yeah. So
Gail's probably at home just like, hey, you want to hold them till 8 o'clock? That's fine.
I don't think she's been at home. But
well, we are here, as we said, being hosted by Clay is in a secret location. Am I allowed to say where we are?
No, not exactly where we are. Let's just say we're at Clay's office. They can look it up.
Secret location.
And I think some of these people, not all, but some of them know they work for the Catholic Church. So okay.
You can put two and two together.
Yeah.
We promise we will get to the hockey, but because it's episode 200, we have to like go back into the vault here for a few minutes.
Well, speaking of going back into the vault, our initial introduction, if you go back to those real early episodes, had me doing some like crazy voice. And it's like, recording in a secret location deep in the heart of Steveston.
Did it say Steveston?
Yeah,
I want you to tell them about some of the elements we had to fight in those first podcasts.
Oh, gosh. So for those of you who've been along for the ride the entire time, you know that when Clay and I sat down, we literally were sitting down, huddling around my blue Yeti mic plugged into my laptop, sitting on my ottoman, on my couch in my living room. The fire trucks just went by nonstop.
Like, yeah,
your cat was running around at the time too.
Oh yeah, the cat made the occasional appearance on the episode. Like she'd just come up and start like goosing the microphone, purring away.
Your lovely wife Marnie couldn't go to the kitchen because all the pots and pans would rattle. And
yeah. Essentially, Marnie had to go hide if she happened to be at home, and this was our thing. That was where we used to record. And when I'd have guests, like we had Nicole Van Zanten come out for a few times back when Matt here was a guest. You know, that was how we did things.
Nowadays, if we try to do it, it's like you got Baby Force running around. You've got a new kitten in the light in the Force house.
Twilight, our kitten. Yeah,
like I don't think we would even get into the building, let alone getting an episode recorded.
I'd have to start going to Matt's house.
If you could fit, it's a shoebox at this point. Yeah. It'll make the current studio look like a palatial estate.
Yeah, the current studio. When we can book it. So I have to point out, I have delegated the booking of the studio space to Anna at 84603, who's not here. She is back in the home country visiting friends and family.
Wait a second, where's the other guy? Is there another guy in this podcast?
Well, what's his name again?
Adam at Adam FOC, Adam Old Milk Cartier. Adam and Clay can't ever get together. I feel
like Adam
together.
Works like 80 hours a week anyway.
Yeah.
It doesn't even matter.
Well, but I mean, wasn't the running joke back in the day that, you know, the reason that Adam and Clay could not be on the episode was because
Clay was unavailable and Adam was available? Was that the joke? Well, I can't even remember.
I don't think it's even a joke. I think it's reality. Mm-hmm. But we did see each other, as you guys talked about a couple weeks ago. Yeah.
Yeah, it's the only time was to get you together at a wedding. But
not our. Was that like the first time in years since you had seen him?
Yeah, we actually had to do a double take to make sure that we were talking to each other, that we knew who each other were. But yeah,
you both have very distinct faces too. How could you not recognize
That's
each
true.
Other right off the hop?
Two of the best looking people in the Lower Mainland.
All right, let's not go that far, but the universe would implode if that was the case.
Yeah. The speaking of the best looking people on the planet, what's this good looking?
Oh, very Canucks simple, very thing? Simple. A 5-letter acronym that has taken
yeah,
the Twitter
this
world.
Is,
like,
this is.
Hey Matt, if you're nice, I might even let you into this club. It's the GLCPC, the Good Looking Canucks Positivity Club. Now, a couple of things. There's no membership fee. There's no enrollment application. All you got to do is fit two criteria. Matt, you could actually do this. Maybe you got to be positive, and you got to be good looking. But there's no judgment. There's no bar set. Heck, I'm the founder, so it doesn't matter.
Have you seen our reviews lately? We're not positive enough.
I heard about this.
Well, the good-looking part you might have. I've noticed he didn't even offer me an opportunity.
He didn't even,
look
at you in the face
no,
when he said
no. I know, right?
Lifelong. So just so I wrap. So basically, I made it in jest on Twitter, and I'm sure we're going to get into this maybe. All the exchanges that happen on Twitter, I wanted something positive to combat, to be contrary to all the negative stuff I saw going around.
Oh, like the C4 podcast. Got it.
No, the present company not withstanding. So basically, it's a 5-letter acronym that you can hashtag and have a little fun with it. Mm-hmm. I open up all my YouTube videos that way. But in essence, I'm a positive Canucks fan. I try and be optimistic, realistic though. But yeah, I choose to accentuate the positives more than the negatives. And now it's my shtick. And people will actually see me at the games and say, hey, can I join the GLCPC? And I say, no. You don't have to apply. Just you're in if you're in, if you think you're good looking, if you think you're positive. So, Chris, you have both of those criteria, Matt. I'm still not sure about one of them, but your listeners can figure out which one.
You know, on a more kind of more serious note, like you talk about positive and stuff like that. And I'm going back into the vault here. I think of how maybe Botch would have been in the Good Looking Positivity Cunks.
Absolutely.
Sorry, whatever it's
called. GLCPC.
Because I remember one of his last tweets was, I'm on team playoffs, so save me a seat on the bandwagon or something to that effect. And so that tweet I always sort of remember when I think about us trying to be a little positive. And honestly, like, a lot can change now between now and, let's say, April. But yeah, I'm not really on Team Tank anymore. Like, I'm officially, especially now that we're giving up a first-round pick.
You can't be.
But, you know, like, if ever there was a time for me to get on the positive train or the team playoff train, it's probably this year. So I'm trying to be a little bit more positive going into the season. And if there's room on the
GL, say with me, GL,
the good looking
Canucks
Positivity Club, I feel like the C4 podcast is starting to slowly put a toe on that bandwagon.
So. Does this mean we have to be a positive podcast now?
I'm not saying we got to be positive sunshine and rainbows
that
every
means,
day like Clay over here.
We're going to have to like bump Adam off every episode now.
Well,
like,
I mean, Adam's
going to
be here half the time anyway. But like honestly, you look at the team, and we'll get into this as we actually talk about the Canucks, but the team has improved.
Oh, no doubt. And we've talked about that on previous episodes, right? So yeah, you're right. I mean, things are slowly
turning
around.
They will be in the thick of it. Let's put it this way, and we'll talk about it as we get
before we actually get to Canucks stuff, because like there's people who are tuning in right now, like when does this Canucks podcast talk about Canucks stuff? This is episode 200. This is a big deal for us. We are the longest
running. So do bear with us, because I know you've posted us on Reddit, And people are like, oh, just skip to the like 20-minute mark.
Yeah.
Because
what? Wasn't people say that?
Okay, no, it wasn't so...
So, friend of the show, Cam Robinson, yes. Who you know, at @hockey_Robinson, you follow him on Twitter. We did a great pre-draft interview talking about some of the top prospects coming in the draft. And so it was shared on Reddit, and people were like, a forewarning, like the first 20 minutes are bunk, so just skip right to that.
Yeah, they're useless waste. I can't remember the exact term, and then I see
all
this.
The stuff that Chris was in.
Yeah, I just happened to see... Yeah, it was. But this is the thing, is we're quite, you know... Straight up, one, we're going to talk about
June. Yeah, the off-season.
We're going to talk about, you know, fun stuff. We're going to be, you know, far from serious. So these are people who just suddenly discovered us because someone shared
but
this.
Come
on,
in cold.
Yeah, on Reddit. And so I replied, I'm like, I apologize for being useless. Right? Like, I don't know what else
to
say.
So did Derek Pouliot.
I'm not going to be negative about it. And I appreciate that for someone coming in cold, they'll be like, what the heck is garbage? Fast forward to the good stuff. That's why we put the good stuff halfway
down. It's like a disclaimer
down.
Before every episode.
Yeah, pretty much.
The good stuff starts in the middle.
Yeah. You make a really good point, and I won't go on a huge tangent.
We're like an Oreo.
But really quickly, like I think a lot of people will want to tune in and just hear the goods, right? They want to hear about the prospects. They want to hear about predictions, line combinations.
Which is totally cool.
Which is fine. But I do think there's a population out there that is interested in your life, Chris, is interested in your life, Matt, a little bit, or at least the relationship between you two. What, like, why it's not just two guys, strangers getting together to talk about hockey. There's a history there and there's banter there, and that's part of the relationship. So I think as much as some people like to go straight to the goods, I think other people are interested in the human dynamic, the human relation. And that's kind of a balance I go for some of my stuff too. I don't go on and on and wax on about my family, but I'll mention it. And those that watch regularly, those that listen to you guys regularly will know when you talk about your family or when you talk about the hockey team you're on or your former work or whatever, or your work, current work, all those things. I think there's something to that.
That sounds like something that's going to go in the next Clay Card Chat.
It probably will. You know what? I was a little disappointed that we haven't quite gotten a mention on the Clay Card Chat quite yet. You know, this is the devil thing. But beyond the fact that we are, you know, a few people just hang out. I mean, think back to when we started this podcast. I had approached you saying, hey, I think we could do this. I think you and I would be good, Clay. And, you know, we live in Richmond. It made it so much easier. And when we started off, I think the premise was it was like two guys talking hockey. That would be no different than any conversation in an office at the water cooler, in the kitchen, wherever it happened to be. And that's really what this podcast has always meant to be. Now, we've tried to, you know, have fun and we've tried to be serious and we sort of go back and forth. But at no point have I ever thought we would take ourselves so seriously that we weren't just a bunch of friends just hanging out talking hockey. Because those conversations happen everywhere, right? I'm not going to look to get a job, you know, with the hockey club or the NHL or anything like that. Like, that's not what I'm here for. I'm just here to talk hockey. I love talking about it.
Well, let's put it this way. Like, we're not in this for the thousands and thousands of dollars that you pay us.
Oh, yeah, because I think you're overpaid.
We're here
be
because we're just here every other Monday or every Monday just wanting to talk about the Canucks. And obviously, Clay, no longer a regular host, but like,
He'll be back pretty much every second episode moving forward.
He can relate to, like, it was truly a pleasure every Monday to, like, talk to you guys and talk to Anna and Adam over the years. We've had some great guests over the years as well. Like, it is truly a pleasure to be able to talk to you guys every Monday, and it's one of the reasons why I love doing this podcast, is because it's just, like, a bunch of guys in a room or girls in a room just getting around talking about the Canucks, and it's honestly one of the best pleasures that I get every week.
And you never purported to being the most stats.
We're never experts.
Analytical. Yeah.
I don't never think ever profess to be experts.
Oh, heck
not experts
no.
on prospects, not experts on strategy. We are people who love the game and can try and express themselves as well as they can. But you're right, not looking, and God bless those people that do, not looking to get a job with a team or with the league.
And there's nothing wrong with that either. Like, actually, one of our guests who had a podcast of his own, Ryan Beach, now works for the Vancouver Canucks. But Ryan,
thanks to us. We're still waiting on the thank you letter.
Yeah, that was totally us. But like, no, like, please don't think we're like, oh my God, they're down. No, not at all. I am so excited for him and others who have been able to take what they do and leverage it and you know, do more with it. That's just not me. I'm the guy that wants to have the opportunity to just have a fun conversation about why, when I was in high school, I picked Uwe Krupp in a hockey pool and stuff like that. Anywho, let's talk a little bit about memories here. I got one from JJ, the blog father.
He gave it to you?
He actually messaged. And
he didn't give a voice memo though, did he?
No.
Of course
no.
He didn't.
No, he just
he can't be bothered to do that for 30 seconds pressing record on his voice phone. But
so Yeah, this is Blogfather.
I see nothing's changed.
Yeah, no kidding.
So
mail it in, JJ.
JJ, the guy who actually founded Canuck Hockey Blog and pretty much still pays for the site to run. Well, so, bless JJ.
Between our hands, but.
His favorite episode was the time that Liz told people to hate on, was it the Prince Albert Raiders or something like that? Or no, it wasn't Prince Albert. It was Selkirk College. It was actually like college hockey. I guess they were playing like the SFU ice hockey team.
I remember this.
And so JJ was like, and Liz was like, telling people to come out and like boo them and, was making fun of their fans and all that. But that reminded me of that particular episode. It was actually just before I got married. It was in February. We were recording in a hotel and, JJ, he made sure that those of us who wished to imbibe had imbibed a little.
Mm-hmm.
Things got out of hand that night. I'm surprised. Like, I think that's the real reason Clay no longer, joins the podcast because we scared him.
Well, you guys know I'm never here to judge. I would never judge you, Matt.
Yeah.
Even Chris, I would never judge you. But yeah, that night was fun. It was, but I had fun. I was drinking my Pepsi all night. It was worked out.
What about you? You got a memory?
Oh, early ones were fun. Actually, when we brought you on, Matt, I've always said, this isn't the funniest or most outlandish memory, but the production values, I've always said on this particular podcast, second to none.
Mm.
And I really think that was one thing that helped podcast grow, whether it's the intros, the outros, the transitions, the cuts, whatever, the clips. I think when we started to work together as a, as a threesome, so to speak, on this podcast, I think I just said, I saw the increase in the quality shoot right up there.
Thank you.
And it was a lot of fun. No, it really was. It really was.
I know for you also, the Botchford episode was one of your favorites of all time. And I know you've always had a good friendship, both of you, really, with Jason Botchford. Maybe you want to talk about that one really quick?
Yeah, I just think...
especially because right off the hop, he asked you if he was gonna you were going to make him sick.
Yeah, well, that's the running gag now. I think people don't even remember me from this podcast. They just remember from these horribly cheesy parody songs, which I love doing.
Yeah.
Chris has worked with me on a couple of them.
Yeah,
not a singing...
No, because he doesn't want me to sing. He just gets me to MC, but then he replaces me, the following season.
Look, that was years ago. Let it go.
Yeah, I'm not bitter. I'm not
great
bitter.
Memories.
Not bitter at all. But yes, when Jason Botchford came on, and Chrissy and I were just talking about this before we came on here, he might not have known, he knew kind of who we are. He didn't know much about our podcast, yet he kind of, through your contact with them, just said yes on a whim, and he helped us publicize it, and he helped us share it, and... It goes to everything that everyone's been saying about Jason Botchford since his unfortunate passing earlier this year, is that he made time for everyone, big, small, well-known or not, and we were the recipients of that as well. And of course, it was probably our best numbers, or at least up to that point.
Yeah, it was definitely one of our best episodes was the Botchisode.
Yeah.
I mean, we always talked about getting Jason back on, and he was always game to join us again. I regret
honestly,
that it never happened.
Kind of, yeah, it is one of our biggest regrets on the podcast is not being able to get Botch on for a second episode.
How about you, Matt?
Maybe Harmon, Boy Genius.
Oh yeah,
could join us for.
I think it would be cool to have Boy Genius on the podcast, whether or not he'd actually join us now. Because
he's a very important guy. Yeah.
Yeah.
One of the memories that you guys brought up before we hit record was as you guys talked to me about being a producer extraordinaire is the time we had DJ Dave. on the C4 podcast, and we were recording, and about 20-30 minutes in, I realized we weren't actually recording, and I had to stop and deliver the news that we were, like, for some reason not actually recording, and there was this, like, pause for about 2 seconds, and, like, a big sigh that came from DJ Dave, like, are you kidding me right now? And he was gracious enough to, like, talk to us again and re-record it. But
Matt, in your defense, we never told him we were recording. I think we were telling him, these are some of the things we're going to ask you about.
Yeah,
and then
right.
he just started, and we couldn't stop him.
Well, and on that note, though, like, he'd actually comment. He's like, oh, you should always have the mic's hot or something
that,
right?
I didn't want to, like, interrupt him, I think, was what happened, right?
Yeah.
Like, he was just going off about some of his best memories and stuff. And, yeah.
Yeah. Way to go, producer under extraordinaire.
That was one of my cutting my teeth moments in producing. So that was one of my other favorite memories. And of course, we've had some great guests on the show over the last few years as well. So honestly, I'm glad to see that we've made it to 200. There were times when I didn't know if we would make it to 200. But here's hoping for 200 more.
That would be pretty cool. If we could get 200 more, I think it would be
what
phenomenal.
Happens first? 200 more or the Vancouver Canucks win the Stanley Cup?
See, there goes the positivity into the tank.
Well, no, hold on. 200 more once every 2 weeks, right? So that's 4 years.
If you think about it, it kind of lines up with the upcoming window.
Jim Benning window.
Hashtag good looking Canucks positivity club right well, there. GLCPC for
this,
life.
This guy's good. This guy's good.
Well, on that note, we are now going to talk about actual hockey talk. But why don't we take a quick break before we jump into, I don't know, whatever we're going to call this segment.
Congrats on getting to episode 200. I didn't know Matt would count that high. Thanks for all the laughs and heated discussions. And let's go, Canucks.
He liked to say the F word.
Oh, then get the f*** here then.
Yeah.
Okay, see ya.
F*** right off.
F*** off. It's going to have the F word on it.
I wish I could give you a f***ing explanation about it. I can't.
You.
You said the F word, Dad.
You called me the F word.
Okay, so Canucks announced on Friday. Well, when did the actual announcement come?
It was,
okay,
Friday.
Well, Friday was the news broke.
I was actually on the golf course when I got these news, so
me
I didn't even have time to process this adequately.
Yeah, so Jim Benning has been extended to the 2022-23 season.
Yep.
So he's got a three-year extension to this one plus three more. And generally speaking, for those that, you know, don't follow this type of sort of press announcement, press release world, announcing anything Friday afternoon is generally done with the intent of people maybe not noticing it.
I'll tell you, from a PR standpoint, it's my profession now. This was perfectly timed by the Vancouver Canucks. Clearly, me being on the golf course on a Friday afternoon, I had already mailed it in for the day. I didn't have time to weigh in on this. And what? So if you're the Vancouver Canucks and you wanted to drop a bomb that Jim Benning just signed a three-year extension and is no longer a lame duck GM, you played this one perfectly, Vancouver.
But the Canucks weren't the ones who announced it. Right? It was Elliot Friedman that broke it. Rick Dhaliwal piles
on. Did the Canucks announce it, though? Or did the Canucks say, hey, Elliot, heads up?
Good point. That's a good question.
It seems like the tinfoil conspiracy seems to be that the Canucks are, like, putting these little breadcrumb nuggets of news out there so that it will soften the blow, so to speak. Like, with the Tyler Myers thing
right,
in July.
Right.
Like, that was all the hype, that he was going to get a seven-year deal, that it was worth $8 million a year. And no, it's actually a six-year deal.
So in your theory, they soften the blow the market,
yep,
the announcement on the Friday. So when they do their official announcement this week,
yep,
people have already had 3, 4, or 5 days
to digest the news. Exactly. But again, like whether it was them that announced it on Friday or not, like it clearly was enough that but not all the ears were there in place on Friday.
Where were you, Chris? So he was on a golf course in town. I'm on a golf course in Bellingham, and I get a text because I didn't have my dad,
yep,
on saying. Actually, the text was WTF. That's not words that I use, but it was from a friend. Chris, what was your first reaction?
Well, so I am quite...
What the fudge Packers?
What the Francis. That's what it is. What the Francis.
The F does stand for Francis.
That's right. I was working from home. I saw the news come in.
Yep.
I had, you know, social up. I had our Discord chat up. And I was at first like, no.
Was Discord on fire?
Discord wasn't on fire because, again, it was a Friday. It was going to a weekend. Like, there was just – people are like, what? And I'm not – I think it's quite clear. I'm not a Benning guy. Like, I'm not one of Benning's boys or whatever they
the
are
Benning
known,
bros,
or,
I've
you know,
heard
known
it.
As. Heard. And I am quite clearly the type who wants him to be in, like, the player development draft side of things, not the actual running the business side of things. That said, it struck me as odd that type of – signing took place when it did. Like, if this was going to be a done deal, why would not have not happened, you know, at the end of last season before he starts, you know, wheeling and
right,
dealing picks away, drafting? Like, it seems odd that they would wait for that to occur and then, you know, put pen to paper. Now, you could say maybe they were negotiating, it was tough negotiations, blah, 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 and then, oh, finally they signed it. But then, why then? Like, why? It occurs to me that the Vancouver Canucks wanted to find a real quiet area in the news cycle that people might not notice to share, knowing the visceral reaction it would have in the market. Because essentially, I would say it's a good almost 50-50 divide. Mm-hmm. There are people who are, hey, Benning's done a really good job. And then there's the other half, the Benning, you know, shouldn't be around. I have to admit, I fall into like, I'm not a Benning guy. I will give him all the credit for some of the deals he has made this year in the offseason. Not a lot, but I will give him credit. I actually feel his draft record has been phenomenal.
Yep.
Right? Like I've talked about this episode and episode. It's just when it comes to running the business, he continues to bring in Jags for non-Jag prices, and how do you let that go? That
means just the guy, Clay. It's been a while.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. But that, again, that's sort of where I fall. So I'm
– I know it's been a while for you, Clay.
I'm upset that I'm not going to see GM Lawrence Gilman. I've always wanted GMLG, man.
GMLG is going to Seattle first.
So, okay.
No. We'll do this another day. We're not doing this
now. But if GMLG is going to – oh, fine, whatever.
We're not doing this right now.
This is what I have to put
up with. This is another day. Tell me, you know, this is the pedestal that Chris, the proverbial hill that you will die. Never mind, it doesn't matter.
I just love sitting physically in between the two of you. I feel like it's symbolic. I feel like it's appropriate. I feel like it's meant to be.
We're basically asking Clay once again to pick between his two friends here. Anyway, on the Benning thing, yes, I was also surprised like you. I got a question, and maybe Clay can answer this one first. Do you think that this has been in the works for a while from the Canucks' standpoint? Like, do you think ownership has always had it in their minds for maybe at least since April that they wanted to get an extension done with Jim Benning?
I do. And I think this actual official extension means he has a chance to see things through, right? A complete cycle. By the time he's done these 3 years, if he lasts all 3 years, it'll be 9 years that he's been here in this
market. Fun fact, would make him the second longest tenured GM behind, in franchise history behind the big Irishman.
Yeah, behind Pat Quinn. So instead of all this, well, he's brought Myers in and JT Miller and all that, and he's only has a year to see it through, lame duck GM. Oh, no, maybe he's just doing all this stuff just to see what he can do and save his job. No, he's already saved his job, and now there's not so much of a rush, right? We talked about team. I can't even say the word team, T-A-N-K. I'll never say it. Yeah, there's no such thing as that anymore because now he's been given all the keys to the kingdom, so to speak, to make this happen and to see it through. And he's not in a rush to do it in a year. Mm-hmm. And he's got 4 years. And by that time, all the draft picks, save for Horvat, are going to be his. All the trades, all the signings. This is truly his team now. And he's got 3 more years to see it through. So, yes, I do think it's been in the works for a few months.
Well, the reason I find the timing odd is to that point, right? Like, he was operating as if he knew he was coming back. But then on top of this, we've also heard scuttlebutt that the Canucks at some point were looking for, you know, a Trevor Linden replacement, whether it's a president or whatever of hockey operations, like whatever it would be above the GM. I can't imagine they're doing it anymore. And if they are, like, why would you be essentially hiring someone to say, yeah, you can't touch this guy? And I don't see the Aquilinis being all that interested in paying a GM to go away so soon after he's been signed to this multi-year deal.
I have a suspicion that president role is not getting filled anytime soon. From a financial perspective, from a player personnel perspective, like, really, does the president role matter that much when Jim Benning is being held accountable by the Aquilini, by ownership in general? Like, president has always been that role that sort of oversees the GM role. And now that Jim Benning has that security, it's clear to me that there doesn't need to be a president to oversee him, that he has some free reign now, that he has some leash.
Well,
you see what I'm saying, though, a little bit?
No, I totally get it. I think the role itself, though, seems to be more and more prevalent in the NHL among many teams. That said, have you ever got any inkling that the Aquilinis don't want to be more involved? Like, to me, they won't, like, to what you're saying, they essentially fill that role. They want to be almost, you know, fingers in the sand, and you put a president there, and now
their fingers are in the sand, but indirectly through the president.
Right. Like, it creates, I mean, as we now know, structure that isn't as functional as maybe it should be, whether, you know, you have Trevor Linden who is saying something different than you want, or maybe different. Like, we don't know what all went down, but the fact that, you know, Trevor Linden and Benning and the Aquilinis had some weird relationship, it ultimately didn't work out.
Yeah, it's crazy you mentioned that too. I was trying to piece together Benning's history here. You know, the 4-year contract followed by the 2-year extension, now the 3-year extension, right? That adds up to our 9 years. I actually was watching the press conference when they did his first extension back in February 2018. Right, that was 4 months before Lyndon got ousted. And you should see Lyndon's body language. You guys might remember this. He looks all grumpy, looks sullen, he looks sad. And it's almost like you knew that he was on his way out way back then.
Now let's go back and look at it.
Yeah, it's almost not disturbing, but it's very telling.
Yeah.
I'll put it that way.
Now knowing those circumstances that we're in now. Yeah.
Yeah. So Vancouver Canucks have a GM that's gonna be here for a few seasons, right? And again, I don't think any one of us in this room would think otherwise. Even I think at this point, even if the Canucks, you know, were to have a horrible season, I don't think that changes anything at this point.
So what you're saying is, let's say, I mean, knock on wood, it doesn't happen. But let's say that a catastrophic injury happened to one of the Canucks' younger players that severely hurt their ability to compete for a playoff spot. And it allowed them, not allowed them, it resulted in them to finish bottom five in the league. Even if that happens, Jim Benning's job is safe in your mind.
Well, first of all, catastrophic injury.
Let's say
actually
like a season-ending
almost gives
injury.
the built-in excuse. Like,
yeah.
I mean, I'm kind of tired of hearing, "Oh, we lost a couple of key guys to injuries," because it has happened season after after season, and I think that begs the question: what can you do to mitigate that?
Okay, so right? Ignore the process, but let's talk about the result.
So, I still believe Jim comes back. Even more so, I think that type of situation sort of insulates him. I think the reason that the Vancouver Canucks, for some reason or another, would see Jim on his way before his new contract kicks in has to do with, you know, something outrageous occurring. Or alternatively, the Canucks actually following through and bringing in that layer above. Because ultimately, you know, when you bring in a new guy to run the shop, the new guy will always want his own people or her own people. And it happens more often than it doesn't that then changes get made. But again, I don't see the Aquilini's doing that at this point.
I see him safe for 2 years, Matt. And I say that because he's got 1 year left plus three, right? So he's got 4 years, essentially. I think they're going to give him half of that because of this whole, honestly, maybe I'm reading too much, this whole JT Miller condition trade, right?
Yeah.
If we bought him out, and we get a lottery pick this year, we get to keep that. But we know that in the second year, whatever happens, that pick is going to. So imagine 2 years of not making the playoffs. That means one of the first rounders goes to Tampa. Then I think he's up the creek.
Right.
But until then, they have that to fall back on. It's just one element, but I think it's a big element.
Well, further to that point, though, I mean, ask yourself, if you're a potential candidate to replace Jim Benning, how much are you even attracted to the job knowing that you don't even have a first-round pick if it came to that for the Vancouver Canucks? Like, looking at that pool, and of course, you can't foresee which candidates are available at that time, but like, let's say the Canucks don't make the playoffs this upcoming season. They defer that pick to 2021, I believe, in that case. What kind of GM would want to come onto this team if you don't even have that first-round pick in 2021? I don't know if I would.
We've had this conversation in the past. Someone would take the job.
In other words, but someone would take the job, but would it be the best candidate to take the job is the other question.
Right, and then that person, you have to look past that lack of first-rounder and say, okay, we still have Pedersen, we still have Hughes, we still have Horvat, we still have Besser, Puckholz, on and on and on, right?
Yeah.
But that's a good point. You do limit your choices a little bit, the worse you do.
So best case scenario is the Vancouver Canucks make the playoffs this season. That pick goes to Tampa, and it's not to say a reset, but it almost, in my mind, extends the Jim Benning counter, right? Because, you know, things can turn around. Yeah we made it, but then
2 years after that.
Yeah, and there's still some question marks. I mean, there's the expansion lottery, expansion draft, and so on. So. Yeah. I just, you know what? I think, Clay, the fact that you bring up the Miller deal speaks volumes to the fact that, he is safe for 2 years. He's safe this year. Nothing's going to happen. You don't sign an extension to only have to pay you to go away.
And I think that's why people were also saying, at least I saw some of the reaction, was that it was a year too long, that it should have been 2 years instead of three. I mean, it's picking nits a little bit, but I mean, if we're starting to pick apart the deal, like 2 years probably would have made a bit more sense if we're really analyzing this deal.
Well, and getting to that point too, I mean, we talked about this in previous episodes. That's when cap trouble could potentially plague the Vancouver Canucks. Not to suggest that the cap isn't tight for them right now because of the cap recapture and all that, but you're going to have some players looking for big deals, and you know, imagine, yeah, coming to that situation where potentially you don't have that draft pick, you have no cap space, like you're in such a weird spot. I don't think the Aquilinis would go and say, hey, you know, we're going to pull the plug. But then I don't know what the Aquilinis think.
Like we've seen with the case of John Tortorella, for instance, that the Canucks have no problem pulling the plug on somebody, even though it's a multi-year deal.
So that to me is still very weird.
The
only thing that I can think of as to the Vancouver Canucks deciding that Torts had to go had everything to do with what happened against Calgary. Mm-hmm. Either that or the dressing room brawl.
Speaking of memories, I remember Blatchford's face in the press box that night.
And then like other things, like, that season was weird. Like you had the dressing room brawl, you had Tortorella being the reason that Luongo was gone, right? Like there were a number of things that happened that year where I think that's where the catastrophic occurrence took place, right? But then conversely, you got rid of the GM that had 1 year removed with the new coach, and then you bring someone else in who's like, yeah, I'm going to get rid of this guy, and then so began the real good era, and now we're in I don't know what era we call it.
And the brand just suffered so much that season, right? Between the dressing room brawl, between Luongo leaving, there's just so much that, and that's 2 months there, right? Just January to March. I think the Canucks maybe found that irreversible, or they simply needed to a fresh start. That's why Gillis gone. That's why Tortorella gone.
Yeah, and you look at the standings prior to that Calgary debacle. Vancouver Canucks were in the thick of the playoffs, and then Tortorella gets suspended for was it 10 games?
10 games, yeah.
And I think the Canucks won two of the following 10, and then could not recover from that point and just plummeted. Whether or not that had something to do with it, or whether or not the fact that Tortorella was riding his horse hard.
Yeah. And then we overachieved the next season with Willie D, right? Yeah,
that was a real good season.
Yeah, and then it sets up these false expectations, and we've crashed so far from then, and now it's been four playoff-less seasons.
Yeah, now you know what? That's the tough part, is that if the reset should have occurred, it probably needed to occur when they decided, okay, we're going to remove Tortorella, we brought in a bunch of new people. That was
but hindsight is 2020.
Oh, yeah, no, it totally is, but things were things and things happen. Anyhow, GM Jimby, he's coming back. But yeah, we're going to take a break. I don't know what else we'll talk about, but you know what? Things are things. But there's a rundown here. I don't know what I do. You're the producer. Take control.
Hello, Chris, Anna, Matt, and Adam. This is Rich F., otherwise known as Rich in Alberta. And I just want to say that I'm very, very glad that I found this podcast and little Discord community. You and everybody else are always thought-provoking and hilarious. So congrats on 200 episodes, and here's to 200 more.
Okay, you know, Brock has not yet signed. I know we talked about this in a previous episode, the fact that
there's... And the episode before that.
You know, stuff going on.
And the episode before that one. Every episode is a "Where's Brock?" episode.
Yeah, well, you raised actually a good point here in the rundown that I am sure you'll get to, and we asked the question, "What's the holdup?" Because he's not the only restricted free agent in the market.
Maybe
that's still waiting for a deal.
Well, or maybe Brock is waiting to sign an extension until he hears what we have to say on the C4 podcast because Clay is on this episode.
That's what I was thinking.
Okay, he needs
sage wisdom advice that comes from the Clay Car chats. From all of his YouTube videos, everything, before he signs on the dotted line.
What's the deal he's going to sign?
Okay, I think he's going to sign 4 years, $7 million. Okay, that's what I think.
4 years, $7 million?
Yeah. Okay, here's a question. I was talking about this with my golf buddies. There are seven, what you call elite or high-end free agents right now, or RFAs.
Is that many?
Yeah, you got Rantanen.
Marner, Laine, Connor.
Kachuk. And
Kachuk. Point.
Investor.
So many.
We were arguing that
Aho probably would have been in there before.
Exactly.
Then.
Yeah. We were arguing that there's three tiers. If you'd agree with me that Rantanen, Point, and Marner are like the top tier of that.
Yes.
Would you agree that Kachuk and Connor? No,
I would
Dennis Kachuk, Connor, Besser, and Laine.
I would put Besser ahead of Connor.
Okay. So maybe Kachuk and Besser are in that second tier. Would you put Laine with them too?
I would put Laine in the same Besser tier.
Okay. And then if Connor's up there,
like
maybe there's only
it's
two
Marner
tiers.
And Point. And then it's a divide, and Rantanen, and then it's a divide. And then it's like Kachuk, Besser, Lane. And then I would put Connor at the bottom.
Okay, so whether that's not two or three tiers, that's kind of the debate we're having. Is Besser waiting for one of his contemporaries?
I think he's waiting for Marner first. I think they're all waiting for Marner to set the market, so to speak.
Well, speaking of Marner on that note, what was with the smoke that came out that the Canucks...
I don't think that was anything.
Well, no, like
it was one guy in Toronto.
It was, well, okay, and this is where, as soon as it's from Toronto, it's like, okay, I totally...
It was something Berger? I can't remember his name.
Well, okay, it wasn't Mitch Berger.
No, it wasn't Mitch Berger.
Nor was it Hamburglar either.
Yeah. No, it was like Burger Bites or something.
Yeah, but it's an actual, mainstream media guy who suddenly comes out and says the Canucks are going to potentially put in an offer sheet, which one... You know what? At this point,
with all that cap space we have,
if they were to go and do that, have at it. Picks,
yeah.
Like it was,
and all the draft picks we have. Yes,
it was so weird. But
it was great. It was great hockey talk for like a half second, though.
It was, but we've seen one offer sheet so far this offseason, and it
failed miserably.
Yeah, what's not to suggest that?
I feel like Carolina laughed so hard when they got that offer sheet. They were like, "Thanks for doing our dirty work."
Yeah. Thanks for setting the market. Thanks for,
Well, Montreal tried to load that up all in the front, right? Like they were trying to make it so, hard for ownership to pay. And they're like, whatever.
That was the worst offer sheet since the Ryan O'Reilly offer sheet.
We've gone the Ryan O'Reilly.
I guess that's why they're not allowed to offer sheets.
So Ryan O'Reilly offer sheet where we make an offer sheet to a guy who has to go through waivers who we would also be on the hook for who suddenly goes and plays for another team. Phenomenal player right there. Could it take another offer sheet to get the ball rolling here? Like, we've seen one.
Well, I mean, from a hockey fan perspective, like, and a fan of, like, chaos theory I would love to see an offer sheet. I would not love to see an offer sheet from the Canucks, but I would love to see someone offer sheet Mitch Marner just to see Toronto's reaction.
Well, okay.
I have a friend who I work with who's a huge Toronto fan, and I said, what would you do if Marner signed an $11 million offer sheet and said, I would take the four first rounders and run, is what he said.
Wow.
Well, in fairness, that actually makes it a little bit easier for the Maple Leafs
to solve their cap problems.
Right?
Sure.
And gets their cupboard nice and
well, they're set up for restocked. The next 10 years after that.
Maybe that's what they're waiting for. No,
I'm just kidding. I don't think we'll see an offer sheet. I would love to see it, but I don't think we'll see an offer sheet for Mitch Marner or for any other high profile restricted free agent.
I agree.
And I want chaos.
Let me ask you this. I had a debate with some friends the other day. We talked about Mitch Marner versus Elias Pettersson. Different players, of course. One's a right winger, one's a center. If you had to pick one for the next 10 years, who would you pick?
Huh.
Marner just came off a 94-point season. We've also heard from friend of the show, Hockey Robinson, that he thinks Elias Pettersson could be a triple-digit guy one day. But one's got a 94-point season under his belt already. He's a right winger, and if you're giving the edge to a center a little bit, I mean, it's a close debate. But let me ask you guys, what would you think between those two if you had to pick?
Oh, man.
And this is me, like, speaking from my, like, what would it take to get a Mitch Marner kind of a pie-in-the-sky trade discussion?
You know, I'll qualify this by saying, obviously, I live in Vancouver. I'm a Canucks fan. I love Pettersson. I see all his highlights, seen him live. I don't see Marner's highlights. As a Canucks fan, I would be very hesitant to make that trade.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe because of bias here, I would still keep Pettersson over Marner. The position thing does kind of strengthen my position a little bit. But if it was the other way around, that would be very tough. Like if Pettersson was the right wing and Marner was the center, then I'd go for Marner. I think the position thing makes a big
difference. I think so too.
Yeah.
And that was my answer as well. Yeah. Like I think Pettersson just being a center by virtue of that gives him a little bit more of an edge over Marner, despite the fact he just came off a 94-point season. But anyone who talks about, these pie in the sky theories of trying to get Mitch Marner in trade, like that's probably where this conversation starts.
And really quickly, I think Pettersson gets 94 points if he played with Matthews.
Exactly. Yeah.
So I have two thoughts. One, long term, Pettersson.
Yep.
I feel
short term Marner though.
What I was going to say. If this team is like sort of in the win now window,
if we're trying to make the playoffs now and not give up a high first round in the future,
Like to me, it's the win now. It's Marner. But I am very hesitant to go and start getting into win now. Like, I want the Canucks to succeed, but I feel Pettersson provides extreme value. And whether or not he even hits the triple point ceiling that Cam Robinson has shared, I am still of the belief he makes the Canucks a better team. I want him to be the next Sedin, so to speak. And I have a soft spot for, you know, like the Stan Smith, the Trevor Lindens. Even though Trevor did leave the team, he did not leave the team because he wanted to, and he got brought back home. Like, I want to see the guy who can dress as a Canuck day one and retire as a Canuck is day how many ever down the road.
Yeah, Matt, I'm fascinated by your question too, because then it's not just position, it's contract, it's age, right? Yeah. You have to really look at the two guys equals coming in the same year.
And taking Pettersson out of the equation, it's like you're really great at the right wing position, but you're really thin all of a sudden at the center position. And like, you're starting to count on like Bo Horvat getting into that 1C role. Maybe you're counting on Adam Gaudette to be a second line center role. Like, there's a lot of hypotheticals at play that I don't think you could really answer by having Mitch Marner here instead of Elias Pettersson. Circling back to the Brock Besser discussion, you mentioned 4 years, $7 million per is what you think it's going to look like. Talk about why you think that's going to be the case.
Yeah, I used Timo Meier's contract at San Jose as a starting point. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he was almost out of the gate in early July. Very similar numbers. You extrapolate the numbers, very, very similar. And I think when I was talking about Besser a year ago, I was thinking, oh, yeah, six years, 7 years. Let's lock this guy up, right? But I think Meier is a very good comparable. And I see a lot of these seven RFAs that we just talked about a few minutes ago. I see more of them going with a shorter term contract and as opposed to a longer term one. I just have a sense. And Aho ended up being five, right? With Carolina?
Was it five or was it 7 years? I'll look it up.
Yeah.
Continue.
Yeah, maybe I was completely wrong. But with the best thing, and really quickly, the Meier contract's really interesting because it goes like $1 million, then 10 or 11 million, right, for the last two seasons. That means basically the fifth season, the first season after his contract expires, he's still an RFA. If San Jose qualifies Timo Meier, you have to qualify at 100%. So he's basically getting a fifth year at $10 million. So when you average out all the money, it's not 4 years at $6 million. It's technically 5 years at 6.8 or 7. So maybe Besser does something very similar. 4 years for his $28 million. Then that fifth year becomes also $10 million, and now it's 5 years over 38. Now you're over seven on average value. Does that kind of make sense?
Yeah, it does. Just while you were talking, sort of thinking, when does the current CBA expire?
Soon, I thought.
Well, I want to say
within the next 2 years, to be honest.
Because how much does that now lead in? Like, if you're – like, we did see in the last sort of few seasons a lot of players switching over to much larger – you know, bonuses to ensure they got guaranteed money with the, you know, Louis Erickson. He's getting huge bonus payouts with, you know, essentially pennies on the dollar for his actual contract value. Bonus gets paid before the lockout occurs. We don't know what the NHL and the NHLPA will do when they sit down and negotiate, but could there be some thought on a deal that provides flexibility for what might happen in the future? Or do you think they would want to sign something that at least bridges that or goes beyond to provide sort of the guarantee that if things do change, they don't change, you know, a negative player. Like, I only ask this because I'm not the smart guy on the podcast. It's the two of you.
I thought you were putting your tinfoil hat on, like the whole CBA expiring thing.
Well, okay. I mean, I'm still a little bit bitter that the NHL and AHLPA came up with the deal that retroactively went and look, I'm sorry.
I know. You warned us about it for years. You warned us about it when Clay was a regular on the podcast. I do remember that. You were right. You want me to say this? But you were right, Chris.
Okay? I'm going to continue to bring this up every single episode.
He's recording my "you were right, Chris" and putting it into a drop. He will use that one day.
Yeah, that'll be the start of this episode. No, it's a serious question, though, because we are reaching that point when contracts
– I don't think players – you know, account for that kind of stuff.
Well, not the players, but their agents. I mean, if they don't account for that type of stuff, why are we seeing bonuses being paid the way they are, right? Like that just suddenly appeared, and the thought based on what, you know, in the mainstream media have been having a conversation with player agents and such is that we're just making sure the players get guaranteed money, especially with the world of, you know, buyouts, the world of, you know, those who don't have NMCs and what have you, making sure they get their money.
No thought, no opinion. I think it's a great question. I have not even thought about that actually as a factor.
Mm. Chris is ahead of the game.
He's proven
he
that
does think ahead. Yeah. I know it's. I don't want to give him that much props, but yes, he does think a couple steps ahead every now and then.
I just don't have any of the answers.
All right. We'll take a break. We'll come back with a little bit of half full, half empty. We'll talk about the top five storylines from Clay heading into September.
Hey, guys. This is Trev Goldie here. Wanted to congratulate you guys on the 200th episode. It's been a interesting journey with you guys and been great listening to you for the last little while. I remember joining in listening to you guys when Clay bring in the haiku poems, and as it evolved over time, you even brought an English woman in there. So I won't hold that against you, but anyway, congratulations on 200 episodes. Well done, and look forward to another 200. See ya.
Take hitting out of the game. You can't hit anymore, so don't do it.
The unsportsmanlike conduct, I want to get an explanation on.
No kidding.
Because how do you get suspended for unsportsmanlike conduct?
Plus interference. There's no interference there. He had the puck.
Now, Madison never ever did that before. Now, why did he do it? And that because he was mad.
Well, your early favorite for the Calder Trophy, that's for sure. Elias Pettersson, you might even say your early favorite for the Hart Trophy.
Just to get back to your question, Elias is going to play plenty. He's going to get a lot of power play time. And yeah, I'm concerned about our offense. We lost 200-point players, and we've got to find a way to score.
Half full, half empty. This came to be because when Matt joined the podcast, he brought the empty heart.
Did I bring the empty heart?
Oh, yeah. Like it. We were, so Clay is
like GLCPC for life.
Clay has always been so positive. And I remember someone was actually.
It's a new leaf, a new day for me.
Someone had described the podcast back in the day is that you had Clay, who was like, you know, really positive. You had Matt, who always brought like the hot takes and some of the. And then there was Chris, who always just sort of sat on the fence.
You're that fence sitter.
And, you know, was balanced, which I always found funny because I never thought I was at all balanced.
Yeah.
But since Clay's been gone, I've probably been the more positive guy.
I know. He's been the positive one for all of us.
Which says a lot because I've been down on Jim Benning.
I think Anna's taking the neutral fence sitting.
Yeah, Anna's more in the middle. And
Adam
then,
takes no role.
Adam's definitely the hot takes.
Adam, like, the thing is, like, that's where...
Where do I sit in the spectrum now?
I think, if we go...
I'm sort of in between neutral and negative, I think.
Yeah, you're more negative than Adam, and then there's Adam on the other side. The thing about me, though, is I sort of float, like, Adam and I agree on a number of different things. Like, both Adam and I are not, you know, Benning boys. Neither one of us ever have, neither one of us ever will be. And there are a lot of sort of things that we're, like, lined up on. But then there are another place, like, nah, man, that's a harsh take.
Yeah. So let's talk about storylines, and maybe we'll get into who's positive and negative on those issues. Top five storylines from you, Clay. Like, there are so many storylines heading into the season. I feel like this is one of the most intriguing seasons coming up that we've had over the last 5 or 6 years, because obviously the moves that were made over the offseason have brought a lot of intrigue to this team. There's talk about playoffs. There's talk about, you know, this first-round pick that is hanging in the balance now, so it adds an extra layer of drama to the whole thing. It is, and Brock being unsigned, we don't have a captain. Like, talk to me, like, I've probably named a few of those storylines, but talk to me about, like, what are you really looking forward to the most right now?
Sure, I'll give you three real quick, and it sounds like a cop-out, but I'll go by position. I have one storyline for the forwards, one storyline for the blue line, and one storyline for the goaltending. For the forwards, for me, it's simply, does JT Miller and Michael Ferland give the Canucks finally a bona fide top six? And we've talked about this before, you guys have talked about this before, but when you have Pettersson, Besser, and JT Miller, it sounds like he was promised at least some time with them. Then you have a Horvat and Pearson who have chemistry, and you put a Furlan in their line. Now you have guys like Virtanen, Levo, Berchi, Godolbin if he signs, Gaudette, all these guys fighting for third line minutes. Mm-hmm. And then you still have the Setters, Beagles, and Mott, and Rissoni comes back. So that's, and I didn't even mention Eric, but I just did. Eric said, that's the most depth we've ever had.
Yeah.
So what will the top two lines turn out to be? And yes, not even insulating Horvat, he doesn't mean insulated, but getting him away from such tough matchups now that we have a Miller and a Freeland that can do some of that lifting. So for the forwards, that's my storyline. For the D, it's how quickly can Quinn Hughes establish himself? Can he be a true number one D or top pairing D by the end of the season? We know that's what we want in two or three, but can he get there now? Because we don't have a bona fide number one. We have guys paid like number one. Edler and Myers both making $6 million, but I want to see Quinn Hughes establish himself. PP1, get up there quickly. And the goaltending, I think there's like three storylines in the goaltending itself. Markstrom, can he continue his strong play from last season? How many games is Demko going to get? And when it comes trade deadline time, depending on where the Canucks are, I think the most fascinating story is going to be what's Jacob Markstrom's future.
Yeah.
Last season of his contract, if we're in the middle of a playoff hunt, you're going to keep him, right, and then try and extend him. But if we're not, do you flip him for a first-rounder or a second-rounder prospect and put all your eggs in the Demko basket? Like, that's really fascinating to me.
I just want to point out that this is something I continue to bring up, too.
Clay's the Markstrom thing?
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Like, I think they're...
Yeah, but I don't really pay attention until Clay says
that. That's true.
So now we have both the two good-looking guys
talking
about. So you guys are both probably right in the sense that I think not a lot is being talked about with Jacob Markstrom and his possible future with Vancouver Canucks. Because you've mentioned, Chris, as well, with this whole expansion situation looming for 2021, the Canucks are going to have to commit to one of them in 2021.
Well, and I don't see them putting two picks into the crease. Like, you don't...
You can't... Can you even protect two goaltenders? You can only protect one.
No, I thought you could protect two if you went with the block of players. It's fewer players that you can protect.
Yeah, it's either 7-3-1.
Well, the Canucks can't be doing that, though.
No. That's why they're right. Exactly. So
they won't protect two goalies, is I guess what I'm saying, because the best practice would be to protect as many skaters as you can. So, yes, I do think, now that I listen to Clay and I've listened to you in the past, that yes, as a fan base, not a lot is being discussed on what to do with Jacob Markstrom and Thatcher Demko. I think the Vancouver Canucks are really happy to let this play out and let the best goalie assert himself as the starter. It could be Thatcher Demko, but I think Jacob Markstrom is going to get every opportunity to really cement his status as not just a 1A goaltender, but as a true bona fide number one.
The storyline.
Oh, okay. We're just going to let it die there.
Yeah, no, totally. I agree with you.
Yeah, I'm totally because I brought it up.
Could he get a
first
round pick? By the way, you think?
I think if he.
Well, and that's not that he can't. Just look at the time of season
and the market for goaltenders in general, though. It's not very a buyer's market or a seller's market, so to speak.
You know, actually, I tell you what. If Jim Benning got a first round pick by trading Markstrom
to essentially
a
deal
as a rental, right? Because
he's UFA.
Exactly. Man, I will
give him a 5-year extension.
All the crow,
That
I need to eat because that is smart moves. But I'm not telling anyone that listens to this podcast that he has to because I don't
even
see
if
it
he
happening.
Gets a second rounder,
to
soften the blow, so to speak, of a JT Miller trade. I would be okay with it.
I probably shot high with the first rounder. I was speaking so fast there.
Classic play, aiming high, positive.
But it will be a team. Imagine a team that loses their goalie or needs a bona fide backup, like a team that's really loading up for the playoff for the Stanley Cup run.
But the question is, does that happen at deadline? Because generally, a team who loses, I mean, it would have to be like a tragic situation that occurred to a team's crease in a few days leading up, right?
There are a few teams that I can think of off the top of my head that could be in the market for some insurance, if you will, for a goaltender. Like Calgary's situation now. I mean, they traded Mike Smith, but they acquired Cam Talbot. Well, they didn't trade Mike Smith. They let him go. Like, they've got Cam Talbot and David British. Like, those are not secure goaltenders by any stretch of the imagination. Like, Buffalo, they're probably pushing for a playoff spot this year. Like, there are a few teams, I think, that are going to be pushing for a playoff spot, just like the Canucks, that don't exactly have what they would call a top 15 goaltender in their crease.
Fair enough.
Anywho, top storyline that you were also thinking about.
Well, okay, so top storyline for me has more to do with the fact of, is this team ready for the prime time?
Are you ready for this?
Yeah. It's the hockey song, get too limited back. I have been talking about the fact that I felt that the Canucks were at least a season away. But I have to call a spade a spade. I can no longer hold on to the belief because they are now focusing on this being the year we're ready.
I mean, Jim Benning said, hold my beer or hold my Pepsi.
Yeah.
And just fast-tracked this whole thing into, like, let's see if we can do this a year faster. Right?
So, top storyline is Chris wrong. Because if I'm wrong, That's good. That's I have always made it very clear. I want this team to succeed. I want to cheer on a team that is competitive night in and night out. And when I say competitive, I mean not put in the good effort and get the moral victories, like where you can actually say, so you say we have a chance. Mm-hmm. I want that energy. I am missing it. In fact, there PJ at Rising Action, Patrick Johnston, he had this article about a week or two ago sort of about sports in Vancouver, professional sports right now. And it's a tough time to be a professional sports fan in Vancouver. I won't bring up the one team that's having success because of how polarizing it is in the sports world. But I miss the energy that there exists in this city when there is a team to really rally behind and get behind.
Yeah,
and I want that back.
The Lions and Whitecaps, they've certainly blown their opportunity.
Heck, even the Canadians have been having a rough go. I mean, we go to like down the list. The Warriors ain't so hot. You know, Giants are actually okay, but still, it's just we're missing that. So I want this team to succeed, and I want to.
There are no Vancouver Titans.
That's true. I want the Vancouver Canucks to succeed. Second storyline.
Stop stealing my ideas, by the way.
Well, go ahead. I'm reading right now, but the other one was the 50th anniversary season.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, you can go with that one. Okay. That wasn't what I was going to say.
Okay, so the 50th anniversary season. The Vancouver Canucks have invested quite a bit of a promotion into the fact this is the 5-0. They've essentially rebranded the team.
Very quickly, thoughts on the new jerseys?
Fine.
You're okay with it?
Yeah, I'm okay with it.
Okay, move on.
The rebranded the team, stealing my thunder. And
sorry, I really wanted to get Clay's thoughts on the jerseys.
And they have a lot going on. Like, they're going to be theoretically naming a captain. I mean, we don't know they will, but I can't see them. Can't see them going on. They're going
to
have.
Francesco reached out to ask if it was a good idea to go without a captain again on Twitter. Didn't he say that? Am I wrong? Did I dream this?
No, he actually was a tweet about captain and. You know, most of the replies were like, fire Benny.
Yeah.
Or delete your account.
Yeah, something like that.
Or get right sharing.
One of those, exactly. But, like, you think about the promotional calendar alone. They're banking on, in my mind, the idea that we need some other stuff to go along with this ride just in case. So, you know, wouldn't it be something if they were successful and ahead of all this promotional activity? Like, that could very well,
so
you know, jumpstart.
What are some of the promotional activities that you're talking about? Like, you got the Ring of Honor.
Ring of Honor with Burroughs. We know Sedin's jersey is going to be retired.
Theme nights for every decade, 70s, 80s, 90s,
2000s. Oh, okay. Admittedly, I'm not as up to date on what they've got planned for 50.
They've got all the different jerseys they're going to be showcasing.
They're going to wear the black skate for a few times, if I'm not mistaken.
Cultural nights. There's a lot.
But they do those every year, though.
But they're really investing this year. Like, I think in the past few seasons, we've started to see more and more. Now they're really going. Like,
are they retiring Cliff Ronning's number 7 for the 7th man?
Not yet. That
we could do that again.
I just missed the cut for the final. But they have 12 to 14 theme nights this year.
Yeah, and that's just what we know so far. Yeah. There will be more added. Actually, speaking of retirement, this is going to be totally, you know, off the rails a little bit. Luongo, how do the Canucks honor Luongo? I'm not suggesting it has to be this season, but how do they honor Luongo?
Crap recapture penalty aside. That's what I call it, the crap recapture. You like that? Anyways.
Very innovative.
How do they...
We miss that kind of innovation on this podcast. Hey,
one day. This season notwithstanding, I think he doesn't get his jersey retired. I think he's a Ring of Honor candidate.
What did you stand on this?
So I'm of the Ring of Honor. Like, I know. So hear me out on this.
Yes.
It has nothing to do with Luongo's jersey not being up in the rafters. It's just the Vancouver Canucks have far too many jerseys up there already. For a team that hasn't had the amount of success that we would want them to have had, the one thing they've made up for is putting jerseys over the rafters. That's not a fault to the players that are up there. Like, I think, you know, Steamer having his jersey retired made sense at the time. You know, you think about Linden getting his jersey retired. That made sense to the fan base at the time. The Sedin's going up there. That makes a lot of sense. Burray's up there. People are like, okay, I get it. But now the team is celebrating the retirement of players. And they've reached, I think, a point in time where they need something. And they need a different type of banner up there.
Yeah. And to me, you look at the banners up there, it's eras, right? It goes Smeal, then Linden, then Burray, then Naslin. And I would say when you think of the cup-contending teams, the 2011, 12, 13 teams, that's the Sedin's, that's not Luongo, right? That's Sedin's with Kessler and Burroughs and those guys. So And then you add on the fact that he, you know, Florida, the way he left, all that kind of thing. I still think Ring of Honor is appropriate, but I don't see him at the same level as the Sedins and him up top.
Straight from patron chat right now. Nexus says jersey retirement. So he's not on our side.
I mean,
he's on
just that side. Just to be devil's advocate, so, like, we're talking about a guy who, despite a not as long stay as, like, let's say, Kurt McClain, mm-hmm. holds every single goaltender record in this franchise.
So this is the thing.
The numbers back it up in my mind.
What's right? Jersey should be in the rafters. I don't disagree. But the Vancouver Canucks have too many jerseys in the rafters. Mm-hmm. Not enough.
But that was a low bar that they set themselves.
Correct. So, but then do they continue to maintain that low bar? Like, I
think so. You can't move the bar, so to speak. The bar.
Teams do it all the time. Like, yeah, but no, like, the era thing makes a lot of sense. Like, it is the Sedin era. It wasn't the Luongo era. Yeah. You know, and this has nothing to do with the fact that Luongo, you know, got traded out of town and didn't win us the Stanley Cup. I think he is, for all intents and purposes, one of the best players the Vancouver Canucks have had on their roster. Mm. And you can argue that that list is extremely small, and he's actually a member of it. They should all have, in some way, shape, or form, recognition beyond the Ring of Honor.
So we can all agree Luongo deserves some form of recognition.
Yeah, well, he's Ring of Honor for sure, but I think the problem is that Luongo is coming. He arrived at the Canucks in a point in time when jersey retirement was only really possible if he was able to have the Team Canada moment with the Vancouver Canucks.
So, I mean, hypothetical. The Vancouver Canucks won the Stanley Cup in 2011. Is Luongo then retired? Without a doubt. They could retire the entire team probably then.
Actually, he wins the Stanley Cup as a Vancouver Canuck because he's still a Vancouver Canuck. I think he probably would have been. But the point remains, him winning the Cup isn't what gets his jersey up there. Like, I actually don't know if his jersey goes up if he wins the Cup. It does help his case.
Yeah. You know who the person to blame here is? John Tortorella. Because if John Tortorella doesn't bench Luongo for the Heritage Classic, Luongo's still here.
Were you here 20 minutes ago?
And Luongo would have had the longevity that you're probably alluding to as a factor into him possibly getting retired here.
Okay, whatever.
Tinfoil hat.
The point on Luongo. Okay, so I am not of the belief. Like, it blows my mind. People are like, oh, Luongo's a bum. He was the reason the Canucks lost the Stanley Cup. Hell no.
Tell that to the dead league.
This is the guy who essentially either had to carry the team on his back against the Bruins, and if he had, you know, couldn't do it that night, it was like, oh, well, we lose.
Yeah.
Like, Luongo was the difference. The Vancouver Canucks could not score a goal if they had an empty net.
Yeah, we're going back to the vault, not this vault, though. Anyway, wrong vault.
Whatever. Anyhow, the point being, I think Ring of Honor, and that's more the Canucks, not Luongo. Luongo deserves to be retired. He'll have his jersey retired in Florida.
Very quickly, since now we've gone super off the rails, as you mentioned.
Actually,
the other storyline.
One more off the rails. No, I'm just curious. How many? Outside of Gretzky, are there any other players who've had their jerseys and Gretzky's
universally retired?
Universally retired.
Isn't Lemieux's unofficially universally retired? 66.
Didn't Hosang want to wear
it? I know.
A couple years ago.
So
I'm pretty sure. I was looking this up the other day because I was looking for players who have had their jersey numbers retired by two teams.
Yeah. Well,
and
it's
a very small
list. That was my follow-up question, is how many players have actually just hit.
It's
universal.
It's 7 or 8 that have had their numbers retired by two different teams. Like, it's Gretzky.
Yeah.
It's Niedermeyer. It's... Crap. God, this was such a great trivia question. Gretzky, Niedermeyer. I think Brett Hull. No, not Brett Hull. Bobby Hull.
Okay.
There's a couple of Patrick Waugh is one of them.
Bork
is one of them. Thank you. Yeah. I think Coffey was one of them too. But it's 7 or 8 people.
Luongo
is probably admittedly not in that territory of
right,
players.
Which
leads to your argument that it's not a jersey retirement.
Yeah,
I agree. Smart guy.
Mm-hmm.
Not just another pretty face.
Are you going to the Sedin retirement day?
Yeah, I was going to bring that up. There's actually 3 games revolving around the Sedins.
Yeah.
Right? One of them is honoring actually the other 4 guys. Then it's the Sedins' retirement, and then it's their contribution to community. Yes, I will be going to that retirement.
The jersey retirement.
Yeah. And so on the Wednesday night, it's my church night. That's when I help out with religious ed. I run religious ed.
You already told them.
I've already told the pastor.
Actually,
this is the one night I got to get to the arena.
It's like Feb 16, right?
It is, yeah.
Yeah, it's the day after my birthday.
I can't wait.
That's the only reason I know that.
Okay. I can't wait for Clay to invite me to that game.
It may be a hot ticket, but I'll get back to you guys.
Well, if he invites you to any game, that's more games than he's ever asked.
Okay, here we go. Don't let the door hit you on the
As way. We wrap things up,
You haven't told us your storyline.
Oh, right. Louis Erickson, Saga, blah, blah, blah. Let's move on.
Really?
Yeah. The fact that Louis Erickson is still on this team after, like, all this drama with the Swedish media outlet, I can't remember what it was. Like, everyone thought Louis Erickson was a goner. How can we possibly continue having Louis Erickson on this team after all that?
So what's your prediction? What's your prediction as to what's going to happen?
Honestly, it will not blow the roof off my doors if Louis Erickson is in Utica by October.
When the Canucks
by hook or by crook,
right?
They want that roster spot cleared up because there is a logjam of forwards that we all know and have discussed. And, like, Louis Erickson is the square peg that is trying to fit into a round hole when you look at this roster.
So they waive him. They save $1 million, right? Yes. Not $6 million. They save
the cap space is irrelevant at this point. Like, they don't even care if they can't find a taker. Like, they're not going to throw in an Adam Gaudette or a second-round pick or a Cole Lynn for some team to take Louis Erickson off their hands at this point. I bet you they've exhausted all options to trade Louis Erickson without having to give up a sweetener. And at this point in August, if there is a scenario where they can just get Erickson off the team, they will do it. And I think, like, those bridges have been so far burned. They have been charred. And, like, Travis Green said to the media, like, he respects Erickson's career and that the best player will play, etc. That doesn't sound to me like he's got a lot of confidence in Louis Erickson being on this team.
I do miss Matt's metaphors. Those are good. It's not just a burnt bridge. It's been charred. Beautiful.
Hmm. You don't tune into all the episodes, do you?
No. Why? Does he do more?
Oh, yeah. Some of them, it's like, oh.
Others some of them are like, are you even speaking English?
Yeah, it's like.
English is not my first language.
And he reaches. He's like, it's like, you know, marble rolling down the hill gathers no grass.
All right. Tell me one time when I said that.
Well, no, but that occasionally, like, he tries to, you know.
I hear
you. And Anna and I have to take him to task anyhow.
Well, Anna's literal expert or whatever she is, right? Like, she
just sounds like she's from London.
God,
Chris, as we wrap things up on the C4 podcast, the guest host podcast with Clayton Nemo. Why don't you tell people where they can find us?
Well, you're already listening to us, but if you haven't yet clicked that subscribe button, our hope is that you do. We are in pretty much every podcast platform there is under the sun. We've tried to make it as easy as possible to connect with us. As far as following the podcast, looking for us at C4podcast.com is probably the easiest way, but it's also CanucksHockeyBlood.com. And we are heard on the Overtime Media Network. Now, as far as the fact that we're on social media, we are on Twitter at the C4 Podcast. We are on Facebook, facebook.com/C4Podcast. We have Discord. You can join our Discord, have a conversation. Gate 16 is always a happy place to be. And that is now entitled Wait 16. So for those of you who are around when it was Hate 16, because it was, you know, pretty dark. Friend of the show.
You can join in anytime you feel like, by the way.
Yeah, I'm listening to all these options.
Pretty well, cool. Friend of the show, Josh Gould, who was Clay's lieutenant.
Bodyguard, hype man, all those things.
He was one of the original founders of the good-looking Canucks.
Yeah, we haven't seen Josh for a while, but he'd asked, like, why is this called Hate 16? We're like, well, there's a lot of, you know, negativity. And I've actually noticed Josh hasn't been around as much of late, so I'm hoping that he understands the Wait 16 is us saying, hey, you know what, maybe things are turning around. And now that Clay's back on the episode, I'm hoping maybe Josh will chime in, say hello. But we are also on Discord, as I said, and to find us, it's bit.ly/C4Discord, all caps C4 Discords, all capitals. But yeah, final words of wisdom there, Matt?
Well, before we get to final words of wisdom.
Well, I'm going to throw.
I saw this, and I can't help but, like, I'm stealing your thunder? Am I stealing your thunder?
No, go right ahead.
It's like disapproving dad sounding right there.
I'm just sitting here holding my mic.
I've been wondering what Clay has been scribbling throughout the entirety of this episode. And I'm mad at myself for not coming up with this and putting this together earlier.
Well, how about this? How about you do your sign-off? You do your sign-off officially, and then this will be the very last thing.
Okay, which was what I was going to do.
Okay, fine.
Which is why I was going to ask you, Matt Lee at Matt
Lee. Excuse me while I take this rundown and just rip it up. So we'll just do that.
What are your final words?
I am happy to be a new member of the good-looking Canucks Positivity Club. Did I nail that? I've nailed it.
GLCPC for life.
An hour later, he finally gets the right name. Just in honor of Botch, like, who said he was on Team Playoffs, like, I'm in earnest trying to make an effort to be a little bit more positive. We've heard some of the feedback from our iTunes reviewers. The team will be competitive.
Jim Benning's building an army?
I'm not one of Benning's bros just yet, but I'm one of Green's boys. Let's put it that way.
Green's boys.
Here we go.
As for me, Chris, Antlight Force here, I am excited that Clay joined us for this episode.
Like, I'm so excited.
When I reached out.
Honestly, thank you for being here.
I was going to like.
Thank you for having us.
I was going to like do everything I could to like get you back on the podcast. I had like a list of things that I would be able to offer. And you
Here's
said
our
yes.
21 like, point plan of how we will get Clay back.
No, and I am the first to admit I miss the simplicity that you and I had when we first sat down around the microphone. Like, it was, I think, a really good combination.
Can I just call me simple?
Can I just?
I did. Well, that's true.
Can I just add, like, the second you hit record, it was like you never left. It was like getting right back on a bicycle in terms of chemistry, wasn't it?
I appreciate that. Yeah, it felt good. Yeah. It feels good.
And I know you're busy now with your YouTube videos in your car, but you could always
kid going off like, to university.
Yeah, well,
you got another kid who's like getting college attention for bowling.
We've actually talked about your kids on more recent episodes.
I appreciate that.
Right? Like, because I said I ran into you and your family on Canada Day, and I'm like, I ran into the most successful family in Richmond.
No.
But we also talk about like how you outkicked your coverage when you got Gail to marry you. And
oh, that's a great metaphor.
You're welcome.
I think maybe hopefully we can get you back on more often. But I know you're busy with everything you do. You've had a lot of success with the YouTube videos. You're the guy who
Sorry, one more thing. Okay, fine. Can you talk to us about the NHL award thing that you got nominated for? Right.
Yeah. Really quickly, it's NHL had all, like 20 categories. Everything that had to do with players to management, and then some fan ones.
Yeah.
So I was nominated. It was best fan video. And we got pummeled, right? We came fourth.
Who won?
There's a guy at Montreal Canadiens game who said Thomas Tatar. So Tatar guy won.
Stupid.
There was a proposal done by the Nashville Predators fan that came in second. There was a Stanley Cup banner, Washington Capitol, like ceremony in his own living room.
So 2018.
And then there was Marie Huey and me singing How Sweet It Is to Be Decked by You.
Yeah, that was one of the better ones.
But thank you. But when the NHL put it out, they said How Sweet It Is to Be Decked by You. And I don't think
that hurt your ability.
He hasn't done a lot of decking, I don't think, yet. But
well,
thank you.
Pedersen might drop the gloves once or twice.
But it was
know.
Nice to be recognized. Yeah, thank you, Chris, for the kind words. And I'll bounce back to you before the end. But in essence, I do miss this. The chemistry felt good. I do listen to you guys regularly. I appreciate, Chris, you giving me the shot to start off. It's not like I've gone into bigger, better things, just different things. Just something that gives me a bit more freedom and creativity, and basically convenience as well. And that was the biggest.
Well, if we got to come to him, we'll do it. Every now and then.
Podcasting from Clay's car?
Yeah.
But certainly still listen to you guys, and it's still my favorite podcast, goes without saying. And without spoiling my thunder for a couple seconds from now, I do wish you guys the best, and thank you for having me on.
Oh, thanks for joining us.
Are we better than the Larsh cast?
You're my favorite podcast, we'll put it that way.
Shots fired.
Actually, I have to ask you, do you know the history here?
Of the you and the Larsh cast?
Yeah, because it's
no,
like,
I don't. I just know that there's like eight guys on there every week.
So the short version of what's really not even meant to be a long story, they had a tweet about being the podcast that like speaks to the common people and isn't delusional and all this jazz. And all I did from at the C4 podcast is I said, I wonder who they're talking about, # asking for a friend. Because I get it. I mean, we're often told.
Again,
you know,
perceived as negative.
Yeah, and that's fine. We own that. And they replied and were like, oh my God, you know, let's all be friends. And then Pucks on Net got involved. And sort of like some of the more established podcasts, we all sort of, we have fun with these things.
Yeah.
And the Larsh cast took it very serious. And then they said something that got Anna a little triggered, and then it went off from there.
Uh-oh.
It's the greatest thing. It's the new Monday Night Wars.
Yeah, it's pretty
it
much
is, it.
It
really
it
is.
It was
the new Monday
Raw,
Night
yeah,
Wars.
Yeah, Raw versus, you know, Monday Night Nitro.
Just make sure that
Chris
guys,
is Eric Bischoff.
Oh, okay, just make sure you're the WWE and not the WCW of this equation.
Anna's Hogan.
Yeah. Anyhow, I still don't understand.
Hogan wasn't
what the
in the Monday
was.
Night Wars.
I was just trying to actually, you know, give them a little love because, yeah, I mean, we're the longest running podcast in the market. We talk about that, but there's a lot of room for others to be out there. Anyhow.
Funny.
Yeah. So, Clay, final words? I think you have some for us.
Chris, thank you. Matt, thank you. Anna and Adam, thank you, even though you're not here. Wish you guys the best of luck. And there's only one way that I could think of to wind up episode number 200. It was a staple of the first 80 to 100 shows. It's the power of the 575. So, Matt, with your permission, Chris, with your blessing, I would like to end off this podcast with a haiku. Yes?
Yes.
I almost choked up my water when you said the 575, because that really took me back.
Kudos to C4. Congrats on 200 shows. Onward and upward. And with that, we're out.
Thanks for listening to the C4 podcast on CanucksHockeyBlog.com.